Of the Court of Appeals on September the 16th. We have six cases being submitted this afternoon to this panel, two of which will have oral argument. All right, to my right is Justice Meyer, and to my left is Justice Gabriel. Would you please call the first case? All right, let's proceed.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. There are seven issues raised by the parties in this appeal and cross-appeal. In the limited time that I have, I'm going to try to address two of the more straightforward issues that the appellant, Cactus, has raised, and that is whether the trial court erred in awarding remedial damages to the appellee for damages to an oil well that the even though the jury found that the market value of that well was $0, and alternatively, whether the trial court erred in awarding damages to appellee for negligent misrepresentation under the economic loss rule or the independent injury rule. If the court agrees with Cactus on either of these issues, it would be unnecessary for the court to reach any of the other issues except for the issue attacking the judgment on Cactus's cross up Cactus's breach of contract claim, which we believe we've demonstrated has been waived for the reasons discussed in our appellee's brief. And of course, the judgment in favor of Energico would be reversed. Energico is asking the court to do something in this case that would be unprecedented in Texas law, and that is to uphold an award of remedial damages to a plaintiff for damage to an oil well that the evidence conclusively shows and that the jury found had a market value of $0. Under the settled Texas case law that we cited in our brief, including the Dresser opinion from the Supreme Court of Texas, Energico's damages in this case were limited to the market value of the well before the incident or to the cost to repair or drill a new well less salvage value. According to the only expert who testified in this case on the well's market value, the well was commercially unproductive, and I quote, this was the expert's words, dry hole. You can find that testimony at volume 11 of the reporter's record at pages 81 through 83. Based on this evidence and the admitted lack of any evidence to the contrary on the well's market value, the jury properly and correctly found the market value of the well to be zero. That finding is unchallenged here. It's binding on the court, and the judgment awarding Energico its remedial damages is clear reversible error. Now, Energico complains throughout its brief that this is an unfair measure, but I think it's important for the court to recognize that this measure of damage is not unique to oil and gas law. It's not unique to damaged oil well cases. It's essentially the same measure the courts of Texas have historically applied to damages involving real property in a whole host of situations. For example, in the Pett denied Lyle opinion, which is cited on page 12 of Cactus's reply brief of appellant, this court upheld an award for cost to repair a home explicitly on the basis that the cost to repair were less than the home's fair market value. Just last month, the Supreme Court of Texas in the Wheeler versus Enbridge Pipelines case, which is yet to have a full cite, but you can find it at 2014 Westlaw 4252273. The court in that case said the purpose of this general rule limiting damages to permanent injury to property to either cost to restore or repair or market value is to ensure that the award of damages, and I quote from the court's opinion, neither over nor under compensates a landowner for damage to his property. The court went on to discuss, after making that statement, two cases illustrating how an award of repair costs that exceeds market value would give the plaintiff more than just compensation. And, Your Honors, this simply reaffirms a rule that the Supreme Court recognized more than 50 years ago in the Pasadena State Bank case, that property damages are not intended to give the owner more than the property is worth. Now, Energico basically ignores all this authority. At most, they give lip service to it, and the logic supporting these authorities, and makes what I think is an absurd and somewhat circular argument that because Cactus's negligence allegedly caused the damage, Cactus shouldn't benefit from this measure of damage, and Energico should be excused from having to meet their burden of proof under it. Of course, this argument, if the court adopted it, would eviscerate the standard that I just discussed. It's been time and again upheld by the courts of this state, and would allow plaintiffs to reap windfall damages, which is the very result the Supreme Court in Enbridge and in Pasadena State Bank has said that the market value limitation was designed to protect against. Essentially, what Energico is asking this court to do, for all practical purposes, is because it failed to meet its burden of proof, is to give it something for nothing. And we would urge the court not to do that. Now, beyond this fatal problem, Energico's damages are barred under the independent injury rule. As I'm sure the court knows, when there is a claim for both breach of contract and negligent misrepresentation in the negotiation of the contract, as there is here, the plaintiff cannot recover under Texas law for negligent misrepresentation unless there's proof that of an independent injury or damage flowing from caused by the breach of contract. The most recent Supreme Court decision on this case, we discussed at length in our briefing, is a DSA versus Hillsborough Independent School District case. Your Honors, there's absolutely no evidence in this case that Cactus's alleged negligence in representing how deep its rig would drill caused an injury that was separate and distinct from the benefit of the bargain damages that were purportedly caused by Cactus's breach of the oral contract. In fact, the evidence, when you review the record, I think you'll find the evidence conclusively proves that the damages for both claims are the same. Now, it's been a mystery to me, frankly, why we're even arguing this point on appeal. When the case was submitted to the jury, Energico's trial counsel, Mr. Jones, correctly informed the jury in his closing argument that the damages were the same for both the breach of contract and the negligent misrepresentation claim, and he asked the jurors to answer both damage questions the same based on the same evidence. And the jury did exactly what Mr. Jones asked them to do. The closing that I'm referring to is at volume 13 of the reporter's record at pages 191 through 192. We believe Energico should be stopped from taking the opposite position in this appeal. Now, Energico also tries to get around this independent injury rule that's been Texas law since the Supreme Court handed down federal savings loan versus Sloan. They try to get around it by calling their damages something different, out-of-pocket mitigation damages. Of course, I don't have to tell Your Honors that you don't determine the nature of an injury or whether in a case like this, whether it's distinct from a breach of contract injury by the label that the plaintiff may put on their damages. But whatever you call them, there's no evidence here, and they've cited no evidence here, that shows that the damages for the breach of contract and negligent misrepresentation are separate or distinct. But having said that, the damages here are clearly not mitigation damages. By definition, mitigation damages ordinarily are what a plaintiff does or spends to reduce or minimize the extent of damage that's been caused by a defendant. For a couple of examples, in an oil well case, if there's an explosion down well and the well catches fire, if the owner-operator expends resources to put that fire out and cap the well to stop the damage, that's true mitigation damages. In a case, for example, involving land, if someone were to bulldoze part of your property, causing a problem with lateral support of the dirt, and which would result in some erosion problem. If you put up a retaining wall, what you spend to put that retaining wall to stop further damage to your property would be true mitigation damages. In both of those examples, the plaintiff has reasonably spent money to minimize or reduce the damage from further damage from occurring to their property, not to restore the property to the condition that it was prior to the incident, which is what the testimony and evidence in this case conclusively shows that Energico was attempting to do when it spent $2 million fishing and sidetracking this well. Its purpose in spending that money was to bring the well back into operation, make it a fully functioning, complete well, capable of extracting oil or gas from it. The fact that the repair effort didn't succeed doesn't change or alter the nature of the damage that they incurred. I mean, think about it. If that's not what Energico was trying to accomplish here, if it was only trying to reduce or mitigate the damages caused by the rig's failure to drill down to 12,500 feet, then it was throwing money, good money away for bad. I mean, why would it spend that kind of money to repair the damage to the well with the purpose of ultimately plugging and abandoning the well? Their mitigation damage argument just simply, it just doesn't make any sense, and it's an obvious attempt, we believe, to avoid the application of the independent injury rule. The same result under the economic loss rule. Same result. Just 3 months ago, the Supreme Court of Texas issued an opinion that discusses the history and purpose of the longstanding economic loss rule. Your honors are probably familiar with it. It's cited on page 9 of our reply brief of the appellant, and I'm talking about the Ebbe construction case. And as the court knows, the economic loss rule bars a plaintiff like Energico from recovering economic damages caused by negligence in either the negotiation or the performance of a contract. In the Ebbe construction case, the Supreme Court expressly held that the economic loss rule applies with equal force to negligent misrepresentation claims as it has historically applied to ordinary negligent claims. In this case, it's undisputed. Energico states it several times in their briefs that Energico's negligent misrepresentation claim is based on the allegation that Cactus negligently misrepresented that the rig that it provided could drill down to a certain depth when the parties entered into the oral contract that's at the heart of this case. It's also undisputed that the damages Energico seeks here, whether it's the $2.1 million that they asked the trial court to award or the $5.5 million that they're now asking this court to award for the first time on appeal, are damages that Energeco claims were caused by Cactus's negligence in both negotiating the contract and in performing the contract. In other words, according to Energeco, but for Cactus's negligent misrepresentation in negotiating the contract, and but for Cactus's negligent failure to perform as it represented it would do when they were negotiating the contract, the well wouldn't have been damaged, and Energeco would not have been required to spend the money it did to try and repair it. So based on these undisputed facts alone, Your Honors, Energeco is precluded as a matter of law under the economic loss rule from recovering on its negligent misrepresentation claim. We would ask the court to reverse the judgment in favor of Energeco for these reasons and the other reasons that we've discussed in our briefs, and affirm the remainder of the judgment in Cactus's favor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel.
Afternoon. How are y'all? Unfortunately, Mr. Casey wasn't down at the trial court, and despite what he's represented to the court, Energeco won this trial. So when he says that there's no evidence one way or the other, he's sadly mistaken, and we're going to go through several of those to show that that's the case. This was clearly presented to the jury as an issue of either the tubing parted, separated first, or the rig failed first. The jury found unequivocally the rig failed first. So when it failed, the first thing that was contacted was the rig foreman, foreman of all the rigs for Cactus, Mr. Alfredo Aranda, and was asked what to do. He authorized these damages, if you will, this recovery effort to first fish out the pipe that had been dropped to the bottom of the hole, about 8,000 feet, and try to sidetrack. So it shows from the beginning they know there was a problem, because Mr. Alfredo Aranda is also the one that said this reel would drill to 13,000 feet. This well, before Cactus ever came on the scene, was already over 12,000 feet deep. The rig made it a grand total of 292 feet before it failed. So the negligence misrepresentations about the rig were just that, representations about the rig. Unlike they say in their brief that this is something about what's going to happen in the future, it's not. What they're saying is, and my best analogy I can give you is one of my partners came up with, is you go to and you say, I want to buy an airplane to fly to Europe. They say, okay, here's the model right here, fill it up with gas, and that sucker will make it to Europe. Okay, we'll buy it. We buy it, fill it up with gas, it crashes into the Atlantic Ocean 1,000 miles short of Europe. That was a representation about what the plane would do, not what it could do. And now Cactus has the audacity to say, oh, even though the plane company said send out the rescue boats, we don't want to pay for it. So the damages we're talking about is not damages to realty. The $2,150,000, roughly, is for damages to fish. In other words, now this is one day at a time trying to fish out 8,800 feet of pipe that go all the way to 2 miles below the Earth's surface.
Wasn't that damages to the well? I mean, the well was non-operational at that point. That's damages to the well, which is
damages to the well bore. But the well bore, they have now plugged with this broken pipe. It's corkscrewed, weighed about 100,000 pounds, and they dropped it on its end. So it's not damage to the well. If you talk about the well, you're talking about the ability to produce minerals and gas or oil. When you talk about damage to the well, that's when you look at these cases that Mr. Casey cites to, they're talking about whether or not it was producing $1,000 a month now and now it's zero, or $3,000 a month now and now it's $6,000. So when you're talking about damage to the well, you're talking about its capability to produce minerals. That's not what we have here. What we have is an attempt to try to fix what Cactus broke. And I disagree with Mr. Casey about the Supreme Court's most recent discussion of the economic loss rule. Chapman was decided just last month. It's not cited in any brief. It was decided on August the 22nd. And it talks about the economic loss rule along with every contract. And I'll quote the Supreme Court on this. There is a common law duty to perform with care and skill that accompanies every contract. So this is not just an economic loss. The economic loss case, the main case on that is the Southwestern Bell Yellow Pages. You're going to run an ad for the lawyer and you forget to run it. This has a physical harm. They actually dropped this material to the bottom of the well that caused us to have to then try to fish it out. So if we look at the cases of not only Chapman, the new case, and the cases we did cite in our brief, Montgomery Ward and DSA, it says the same thing, that basically we have a right and to recover these damages, and the economic loss rule does not apply. The thing that I think I need to spend some time on, although Mr. Casey did not go into it, are the credits. There are three credits to this judgment that were given that were inappropriate. One, there were three defendants in this case. There was Tadlock, who supplied the pipe, sometimes we call it tubing, Seminole, who was the broker, and then Cactus. We ordered, or my client, Energico, ordered the Cadillac of pipe, P110. What was actually delivered, we found out after the fact, was N80. Not defective, still sufficient to drill this well. We had expert testimony from both a petroleum engineer and a metallurgist that this N80 was perfectly capable of drilling this well. We sued them for that, Tadlock, and recovered, before trial, settled with them, recovered $912,000. Some of that damage, no doubt, overlaps this. Single injury rule, we're not trying to recover it twice. Same thing I said in the closing argument, in effect. I'm not trying to double dip anyone. But the undergrade pipe was $80,000. That credit needs to be undone. That we had no claim against Cactus for the lower grade pipe. We had no claim against Cactus for the attorney's fees on a negligent misrepresentation, which was another $312,000. So consequently, those two credits should be undone from the judgment. The third credit is their own credit, Cactus. Mr. Casey admits on page 5 of his appellant's brief, they did not even bill Energico for this $215,000 until after the incident. So what Mr. Casey's having you believe, and what the jury did unwittingly by answering the issues the way they did, and the judge gave them a $215,000 credit when they breached first. This incident happened before they even billed us.
Did you object to that?
Absolutely. I objected to the issue. Yes, ma'am. I certainly did. And I objected to the introduction. I'm sorry?
On that basis?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Certainly did. I also objected. They put into evidence, I try a lot of cases. I didn't have any problem with the authentication. In other words, these are the bills, no problem. That's the only thing I waived. They tried to put the bills in. They had no testimony that they were reasonable and necessary. None. None at all. I objected to that. I objected to the issue. That's both in the record. So that $215,000 should also come out because they didn't have any reasonable and necessary testimony. They admitted they breached first because you got to remember, and we got to get the last point and try to respond to what Mr. Casey said, or not the last one, but the one I'm going to try to glump together to catch the rest of this, is what we're looking at is we got to have or what the jury should have done is had the reasonable value of the well as not a cap. And the reason it isn't cap, if we look at the cases that Mr. Casey has cited and we've cited, Dresser is a good example. Dresser, he says that bars it. It's capped by the value of the well. They do say that. But every one of those cases, except one, every one of those cases, it's because it's a producing well. Makes perfect sense. And unfortunately, it's a court going a little overboard saying, oh, everything fits in this pile, but it doesn't. And here's why. All these producing wells are producing $1,000, let's say, of royalty or gas, oil a month. They ruin the well. What's the value? It's $1,000, the present value, or the cost of drilling the well. None of them are wells that hadn't been completed except one. That one case is only because they had enough geological information to tell you that it was going to be a productive well and how productive it's going to be. Despite what Mr. Casey said, and unfortunately he wasn't there, so I'm sure this is just something he didn't understand as opposed to something he would misrepresent to the court, but the witness he's talking about is Mr. Height. Mr. Height, when he said there was a dry hole, Mr. Height is saying that, this was a dry hole at 12,464 feet. It wasn't till terminal depth. You've got to get a well to terminal depth. The best well in the world, wherever that is, let's say the terminal depth is 10,000 feet. That's where they're going to make their money and produce oil. If you check that hole at 9,400 feet, it's dry. We've got to get to the 10,000 feet. And so what the only testimony they have from Mr. Height is to say it's dry at the end where we ruined it, not that it's dry if it's finished. And unlike Mr. Casey said, which is not correct citing of the record, first of all, Mr. Height couldn't even tell you what it took to have a productive well. How could he possibly render an opinion that it's productive if he doesn't even know what amount of production would be necessary to make it a productive well?
Challenge the sufficiency of the evidence for the finding that the fair market value of the well prior to this incident was zero?
The only thing we did, and I'll tell you, this is something different that I haven't ever seen. What happened is we took the judgment that was most favorable, the verdict. We also won under contract. We won attorney's fees. We won some other things. We tried to fashion a judgment that was most favorable. It did not have that in there. It was only brought up post-judgment. The reason is, we were willing to live with the judgment. But once they appealed, then, like I talked to I was so worried about this because I figured you'd ask this question. I talked to my former partner, Craig Enoch, who was on the Supreme Court and the Dallas Court of Appeals, and he said, well, you didn't have to do that until, basically, they appealed. So as soon as they appealed, we asserted that and showed that that was an additional damage, and it is most favorable under evidence that was adduced.
Did you, in your cross-appeal, challenge the sufficiency of the evidence to support the verdict that the fair market value of the well prior to this incident was zero?
Yes, ma'am.
You did?
Yes, ma'am. I believe so.
Mr. Jones, what is the basis of your damage claim?
I'm sorry?
What is the basis of your damage claim?
Well, my damage claim is...
in other words, how do you get to the damage amount that was awarded by the jury?
I can tell you exactly. It's basically for the fishing and the sidetracking.
All right. Now, in terms of at the time when the well was at 12,182 feet, being handled by Nabors Drilling, your client's choice was to have Nabors Drilling leave the site because they were charging $21,000 a day, and to bring on Cactus, who would charge you $9,000 a day, right?
Yes, sir. That's roughly right. Yes, sir.
Now, in terms of the opportunity to mitigate and stop any further damage, if there was going to be any, let me do that a minute. When the drilling was stopped, and I thought it was at 12,474 feet, and you said 370.
I believe that's right, 12,474. If I said something else, I was
mistaken.
All right,
well, that's what I thought I read in the briefs. So it's 26 feet away from 12,500, and it's still not a commercially producing well.
That's correct.
So at that point, in terms of your discussion and argument about the well being, this one being different than others because it never had any production, that's been true. That was true all the way through this whole series of events. This was never a commercially producing well.
That's correct, because it had never been completed.
And is there any basis to ever consider a well being worth anything but zero whenever it's merely being drilled and it's never produced?
Yes, sir. I rely on the evidence we adduced at trial. Again, Mr. Height's testimony was it was a dry hole at 12474. We had our own petroleum engineer, Roger Neal. We've cited it in our brief. Mr. Neal said that it would be a commercially productive well. In fact, his exact testimony is that it would pay out. We couldn't adduce testimony as to lost profits because it hadn't been completed.
It would be producing a commercially producing well at 12,474 feet.
He said it would pay out when it was completed. So it has to hit the Ellenberger. The problem is this is the Ellenberger.
I got to understand. The Ellenberger was 12,005, you thought.
Roughly.
Didn't know for sure, but thought 12,005.
Yes, sir.
Now, when the tubing fell and when it's at the bottom of the well, and the efforts then are to fish out that tubing and to either get it out of the way or to drill around it by doing a side tracking. Both of those efforts were efforts to try to restore the well to the point that it would be a producing well, weren't they?
No, sir. That's not the way I view it, because if it was not a producing well, so it couldn't restore it to be a producing well.
All right, to trying to continue efforts to get a producing well.
No, it's trying to mitigate its damage.
Let me get you to answer my questions. If you're looking at pure mitigation, at the point whenever the problem has happened and the tubing is at the bottom of the well, isn't the best way to mitigate damage is to merely cap the well?
No, sir.
Sure. If you all you're doing is trying to stop any further damage, then capping the well would accomplish that.
Not in my view and not the testimony that was adduced. The testimony that was adduced is if we could drill the well and complete it, this wouldn't be that big a deal. And, of course, it's not you incur $2 million of damage. What you do is you say, we got to fish this out. So you fish out one piece and you fish out another piece. It accumulates to $2 million, but it's only an hour by hour, day by day accumulation of a cost. And this is after Cactus specifically told us to go ahead and do it. They would pay for it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones.
What further damage were you seeking to mitigate that might occur through these activities?
What further damage were seeking?
Mitigation means that you are seeking to inhibit further damage from occurring.
Well,
what further damage were you seeking to inhibit through these activities?
What the evidence showed was that they had leased approximately 4,500 acres. If they didn't have a well that produced, and this was at the end of the lease, they were going to lose all 4,500 acres under lease. So they had to complete a well on this site because they were at the end of the lease. If they didn't do it, they were going to lose all the leased land. That was the mitigation. And if I could finish with Mr. Neal, just so you know, this wasn't a productive well, a commercially productive well, but you got to remember, this is over 2 miles deep. They already had four barrels of oil.
I believe you've run out of time.
I'm sorry,
running
I didn't
into
see the
light. Mr. Casey's time.
I'm sorry.
So we'll give Mr. Casey one extra minute for the extra time you had.
Well, Your Honor, I said the appellee is asking the court to do something unprecedented here. I'm going to do something unprecedented. I'm going to give the court some rebuttal time. Back.
You've heard this before from other people, Mr. Casey. Seldom occurs, but go ahead.
I haven't heard anything here new that hasn't been briefed. I do just want to make two quick points. One is whether the rig failed first or the pipe failed first really is immaterial to the questions that we've raised. And it was Energico's burden of proof in the trial court. I'm sure this goes without saying to the court, but I want to emphasize it. It was their burden of proof in the trial court to show the market value of the well, to prove that it had market value of some amount so that they could get the damages. It's their burden here to show that the evidence was conclusive that the market value was something other than $0. There is no issue, no complaint here challenging the sufficiency of the evidence, i.e., alleging credibly that there's any conclusive evidence showing that the well had a market value of something other than zero. Now, Mr. Jones, in his closing, did throw out the number 8 million or 8.8 million. That's lawyer argument. It was in closing. It's supported by no evidence that the well at the, prior to the incident had a value of that amount. So it was their burden. They haven't raised a point here alleging that the evidence is insufficient to support the jury's finding, and that's all that I have to say. I'd be happy to answer any questions the court might have.
I stand corrected, Mr. Casey.
Let me go back and try to finish your last answer to your last question. Was also what he brought up in rebuttal about what other mitigation there was. They'd spent $8.8 million to drill the well. Okay? Their negligence caused them to lose the well. Mr. Neal testified that it would pay out, which is $8.8 million, but the cost to redrill the wells was $5.5 million. The only evidence we had is the value. The jury found $1.08 million. I have no idea where that number came from, but the only evidence on the cost to redrill the well was $5.5 million. Not another person espoused an opinion. Their expert, their petroleum engineer, Mr. Watson, couldn't even give us a number. We took a break and tried to let him give us a number. He still couldn't give us a number. So not only are you mitigating the loss of the other land, you're mitigating the fact that you've got $8 million in this well, that now it's caused, Cactus has caused them to lose it by you trying to fish this out and salvage the well after Mr. Aranda told us to do just that. So consequently, we would ask that the court set aside those three credits that were given to the well, the $80,000 for undergrade pipe, the $312,000 for attorney's fees, which were not common to a claim against Cactus, and the $215,000, and we'd ask the court increase the judgment by the $1.08 million or the $5.5 million. If there's any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll give back some of my time.
What's your
and time? I have a copy of the Chapman case if y'all would like it.
What's the site? Could you just give me
the site? The case number is 130776, and it's August the 22nd. And it's Chapman Custom Homes and Michael Duncan versus Dallas Plumbing. And the site that I quoted.
Oh, okay. I thought he said it wasn't cited in the brief. Okay. Thank you.
Further questions?
I'd just like to have one number, if you can give us one, for what you think you'd like to see this court do in rendering this case if we did render it.
I'm sorry, sir.
I want to know how much is your request in your prayer for relief, how much money do you think that Energico is entitled to recover?
Well, I have to go into a little bit of my argument to show why they're very proportional argument.
Don't do it.
But it's the amount of the judgment less the three credits I discussed and the increased amount for the to redrill the well, which is either 5.5 or 1.08, the jury found.
Thank you, sir.
Any further questions? All right, thank you. Your case is submitted. Do y'all want to take a break, or are you
fine? I don't need to.
Nope. Okay. All right, we'll go directly to the second case.